This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Hi, I'm Chinny.
And I'm Astrid, and welcome to It's a Continent, the podcast that widens access to African history. We're also the co-authors of a book by the same name. You can find out more information about us on itsacontinent.com.
We're here to challenge the common misconception that Africa is a country by appreciating the identity of each nation. Through each episode, we'll be exploring key historical moments which have shaped the continent.
Okay, hello and welcome to It's a Continent podcast. How have you been?
Yeah, no, good. It's finally creeping into little previews of spring, but not quite.
I'm not sure why you're seeing that.
Although I have... Well, you have been to very hot places.
Yes, I have. So I will be sharing about this in the next newsletter, so make sure you're subscribed. itsacontinent.com/newsletter. I have spent the past 4 weeks in Asia.
Must be lovely.
Do it. I was literally in my gap year bag.
Did you get the trousers?
Okay, I didn't get the track because I was like, that is screaming. Yeah. I went to Asia.
No tattoos.
Okay. But I did get like some nice printed trousers. No elephants on them.
Okay.
Just a bit of a vibe.
A bit of a boho vibe.
Yeah, I'm in my vibe. Yeah. But yeah, so I did the whole Thailand, Vietnam, Cambodia. So make sure that you're subscribed to find out more if you're looking to travel to those places, because it was incredible. Yes. Had the best time. And now I'm back and it's cold.
Yeah, the Eat, Pray, Love era is over.
It's still inside. Internally, there is warmth and sun and joy.
Yeah.
Externally, it's not what I'm representing. It's not quite there.
It's been detoxed now.
It's the only way I get it. Yeah. Although I find the spray the better.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, I'm all for the spray.
The bathroom cabinet spray in every room.
And it's like, this is all the sun that I will get.
Yeah.
But here we are, and here you are.
Yes.
We're starting with African Pride.
Yes, so let's go.
Mine goes to Adejoke Bakare, the founder and head chef of Chisuru. Her restaurant was awarded a Michelin star in February this year, making her the first Black female Michelin-starred chef in the UK.
Yeah, we're still there. We're still having to call out first.
Number one.
Yeah.
Bakare is a self-taught chef and has worked in various sectors, including care and property management, before winning a competition in 2017 that allowed her to open a three-month pop-up restaurant. Eventually, she found a permanent home for her restaurant in 2023.
Nice.
You guys know, if you've been listening, that I like knowing kind of the meaning behind words. Mm. So Chisuru means the silence that descends when you're enjoying a meal.
I love that silence. That's so good.
That's when you know you're enjoying.
Yeah.
When it's just like quiet and like, no one talk to me. It's just me, the plate.
You're just in a relationship with the food.
You know? Yeah, only relationship I'm in.
Yeah. So good.
And Chinny and I both visited Chisuru.
End of last year.
Yes, end of last year.
Yeah.
It was incredible. Like,
so good.
So good. We went for the lunch and had a drink. We definitely recommend the martini. I can't quite remember the full name.
It was like Ogogoro Spirit. I was looking at it online. Actually, I was like, I want that at home. But it was very spicy.
It's a very strong drink. And they only allow you to order maximum two. Because we were there like sharing. I'm like, okay, we have to keep.
You know when the drink evaporates in your mouth before it's like reaching the back of your mouth?
It's one of those. I definitely recommend you pay them a visit.
Definitely.
And Bakare herself recognized that we're very much at the forefront of West African food. And there's still so much more to do. So that's what they focus on and focus on kind of building and growing that way. And for her, being an independent restaurateur and chef is incredibly liberating. We make our own rules, we answer to no one, and we do our own thing. And I'm all for that. So
yes, definitely.
So if you're in the area, definitely recommend visiting Chisuru in Fitzrovia, London. And yeah, congratulations to Bakare, because this is amazing. To only have started in 2023 and
this achievement,
getting a full-on Michelin starred, love it. Love
it's
to
nice
see
to
it.
Just see African restaurants gaining that. I know we also had a past episode with Maria.
Yes, we did.
I couldn't tell you what season or episode that was, but
that just goes,
Sweet Salone.
Sweet Salone, yes.
Wonderful book. And yeah, we discussed the idea of African food being seen as high end and how, you know, perceptions need to be changed in that area. So
and we're moving into
we
it.
We are.
We're moving
it's into great to space. See. It's yeah. very encouraging.
Amazing.
Yes.
So.
Where are we?
This week, we are going to the Democratic Republic of Congo.
Yes, I feel we need to go there, to be honest.
We need
it's
to go back.
Definitely needed.
This week, we are telling the story of Patrice Lumumba. He was a prominent Pan-African politician and the first prime minister of the Democratic Republic of Congo. Lumumba's story is a really important one for us to share, and it's one which we've wanted to share for quite some time.
Yeah.
Just never got around to it because
there's just so much.
So many.
We didn't want to like visit the same countries over and over, apart from Nigeria.
We've done quite a bit of Nigeria. and we felt it was an important time to tell this story, given the ongoing crisis in the country. Mm-hmm. And it feels even more kind of relevant and timely to share it now. Just to give you a heads up, this episode does contain some graphic depictions of violence. If you want to skip that part, you can check out the exact times of those parts in the episode show notes. Let's share the story.
Yes, let's go into it. So Lumumba was born in 1925 in the village of Onolua, located in the Kasai province of the DRC. Between 1885 and 1908, the DRC was under the private ownership of the Belgian King Leopold II, which we covered. That was one of our first few episodes.
Yeah. Season 1, episode 3.
Oh, boom. Someone's done their... someone's been reading their revision notes.
But yeah, if you want to find out, definitely check that out because it mm-hmm. provides a bit more...
a lot of context.
Yeah, context in terms of what was going on in the country at the time.
Yes, and this period was marked by exploitation and terrible atrocities committed against the Congolese people, with an estimated 10 million people dying as a result. I mean, that's a number of people you can't even say lightly. I can't just say 10 million people and just carry on. It's just...
it's...
yeah.
Yeah, it's often referred to as the hidden Holocaust.
Yes. Yes.
Because of just, the sheer number and also the atrocities that were committed under his leadership. And I think something to mark is the word private ownership.
Yes.
Because the DRC at the time wasn't under the Belgian government. It was his own.
Mm.
It was his to do as he wishes. And that's how he saw it. And that's how he treated it. And the people.
And the ownership of the country was later transferred to the Belgian government in 1908, as King Leopold II was forced to abandon the Congo as his activities came to light and he was charged with crimes against humanity. But still, things didn't get much better for the Congolese people. However, Lumumba played a significant role in the country's struggle for independence. Growing up, Lumumba had limited access to educational opportunities. However, he did attend primary school and received a basic education. Despite this, Lumumba was determined to succeed and worked hard to secure various jobs, including working in the civil service as a postal employee. This job was challenging to obtain. He had to pass an entrance exam to be accepted into the postal school, where he spent 9 months studying to become a qualified postal employee. He was also dedicated to broadening his knowledge. He enrolled in evening classes and volunteered at a library to improve his French language skills and deepen his knowledge of history and philosophy. On top of that, he was actively involved in voluntary associations and even contributed to articles for newspapers discussing the colonial situation. All this placed Lumumba in a strong position. He was well connected professionally and socially and had real influence. He was deeply integrated into the black middle class, known as the Evolué then. This class, established by the Belgian government, was viewed as the ideal African, and they had the ability to speak French, dress in European styles, and hold white-collar positions. This is actually quite similar to what they had in Portuguese Lusophone countries, where they had the assimilados.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a very similar idea with that. Yeah. And I think, especially with the Belgians, this whole idea, so évoluer means evolved,
So that's a bit on the nose.
So the whole idea of it, because they came into the DRC around this whole like, okay, Africans need to be civilized, you know, everybody did that routine. And so then you had these this is what we were able to achieve. I think it was like less than 1% of the population made it to that status, but Lumumba had that status. Lumumba's career in the Belgian Colonial Administration's Postal Service began in 1944, and over time he rose to a position of responsibility. However, things took a turn for the worse in 1956 when he was arrested and imprisoned for embezzlement. But why did Lumumba, with a good job and a promising career, decide to embezzle? The answer lies in the unfair treatment that Africans, including Lumumba, faced in their jobs at that time. So like Lumumba, Africans who worked at the Postal Service were not paid wages that reflected their responsibilities and rank. So even though he'd reached evolué status,
it doesn't really mean
it
anything.
It doesn't mean anything. So under these circumstances, they had to find creative ways to maintain their livelihoods. Embezzlement was one such way.
Creative ways. 419.
It's a form of creativity.
Yeah, it is. It requires a form of creative imagination.
Was one such way. So Lumumba's decision to embezzle was a desperate attempt to cope with an unjust system that denied him and other Africans a fair and dignified life. Lumumba spent 14 months in prison. After his release, he pursued a short career as a sales director for a brewery also.
So that sounds like a nice job.
He was very much in touch in very much different areas. I don't think I've meant he just literally has his hands into dabbling into everything. Following his release from prison, Lumumba became more politically active and vocal. He strongly opposed imperial rule and called for Congo to free itself from the chains of paternalism. In October 1958, he joined other Congolese leaders in founding the Congolese National Movement, MNC, the first nationwide political party. Between December 5th to 13th of that year, he attended the first All-African People's Conference in Accra, Ghana, hosted by Kwame Nkrumah. I'd like to say that was season one, episode two that we covered.
I don't think it's episode two, but it is there.
You don't think it's episode two? Could someone get back to us on this? We'll probably add in. We'll add it in the show notes. So he was Ghana's first independence leader, if you haven't found that episode. The conference brought together a diverse group of people, including politicians, nationalist leaders, unionists, and revolutionaries from across the continent and beyond. Around the same time as Lumumba, you also had Joseph Kasavubu emerge as a key figure in the Congolese fight for independence. So Kasavubu had his own political party, the Alliance des Bakongo, so ABAKO, which was also an influential party, especially with the Bakongo ethnic group. ABAKO was the second largest political party after MNC and played a pivotal role during the country's struggle for independence. Despite sharing a common goal, Lumumba and Kasavubu had a sense of rivalry between them. So when I was kind of digging into this, so we mentioned about the All African Party Congress that happened in Ghana. Kasavubu was also invited.
He was there too.
But no, he didn't attend.
Ah.
But then there's a point where Kwame Nkrumah introduces Lumumba as sort of the face of independent Congo. And that kind of Kasavubu hears this, did not take it very well.
Yeah.
So there's just this sense of like, who's going to be the face of the movement.
And following his return from the conference, Lumumba hosted a successful rally on December the 28th to inform supporters about the conference and the future of Congo's independence. It's believed that an estimated 5,000 to 10,000 people attended the gathering. In response to the growing influence of Patrice Lumumba's MMC party, Kasavubu's ABAKO party planned a public rally of their own on January 4th, 1959. Why are they like combating each other? You guys should really be working together.
Yeah, they're just like, no, they seem to be going a little bit ahead, so we're going to have to do our own rally as well. But yeah, it's the same mission.
It's tough. I guess that's what happens when a country's carved up along like ethnic lines. Colonial relic there. However, the colonial government denies permission for the event to go ahead, but supporters still gathered on that day. This quickly escalated into violence, chaos, destruction, and casualties, which was further amplified as their presence coincided with crowds exiting a nearby football stadium. This event is considered significant in the DRC's struggle for independence, signalling civilian empowerment and marking Congo's journey towards independence on June 30, 1960. To commemorate the lives lost, January 4th is observed as a public holiday in the DRC, honouring the martyrs of independence. Between 1959 and 1960, the Belgian government observed a weakening of their influence as certain regions within the country slipped out of their control, with communities rejecting colonial authority. These developments, alongside widespread calls for independence across the continent, pressured them towards granting independence.
Yeah, and I do think the rally that Lumumba did straight after the conference, probably from a Belgian government perspective, was like, okay, we can't be having these sorts of rallies. And so I think that probably influenced that decision to sort of say to Kasavubu and his team,
that they can't.
No, you can't go ahead.
Yeah.
But yeah, obviously things escalated. But I do think that event and going ahead and obviously the martyrs of independence was really pivotal in then really encouraging people to sort of say, okay, you sort of have to, you can take ownership of this and just go out there and fight. Even more, obviously they were doing so, but even more so in order to be able to push for independence. Against the backdrop of calls for independence, the Belgian government introduced a plan for eventual independence for the Congo, beginning with local elections in December 1959. However, nationalists, including Lumumba, saw this as a tactic to install compliant leaders before independence, and called for a boycott of the elections, because we have seen this in other times. It's like, we're doing elections, but we'll put people in that we feel are more aligned with what we want and will keep us in.
It's straight out of the colonizer handbook.
Oh, it's a classic handbook strategy.
Classic.
This led to violent clashes between civilians and Belgian authorities, and actually saw Lumumba imprisoned for inciting violence. Another key milestone on Congo's road to independence was the Round Table Conference of Independence that took place on January 20th, 1960. So as you can see also, if you're like following the dates of everything, it's super short timings, like literally between 1958 to 1960,
so much happens
in the Congo, which brought together Belgium and Congolese leaders to discuss independence. So the Congolese leaders in attendance insisted on Lumumba's release from prison so that he could also attend the conference, obviously all the work that he had done and contributed towards getting the country to that point. And Belgium was like, okay, fine, we'll release him from prison. Lumumba was freed on January 24th, and he was able to attend the conference in Brussels. And eventually on January 27th, 1960, they'd agreed that the DRC would gain independence on June 30th, 1960.
It just kind of goes to show how, because when you think of independence, it's not just a, we're just rolling it out, it's just a peaceful process. It usually involves a lot of fight, and you think about all the people that died within those clashes, just within that 2-year period, really.
Yeah.
It just goes to show the extent of the, how much effort goes into independence. In preparation for independence, the country established a parliament, and the two main political parties, ABAKO and MMC, formed a partnership. Finally.
Well, quote, even I use the term partnership, but quote unquote.
Not really.
Frenemies
vibes.
Yeah.
They agreed that upon independence, Kasavubu would become the president and Lumumba would be the prime minister. On the day of Congo's independence, a ceremony marked the occasion. King Baudouin of Belgium took the time to acknowledge and commend the efforts of his great-great uncle, King Leopold II. Commend?
Yeah.
Yeah, this man that is involved in the death of 10 million people.
Mm. And for me, it's to have the audacity to say that in front of the Congolese people whilst you're in the country is just...
Well, it reminds you of Lothar von Trotha in Namibia, where his descendants had to go and be like, We are sorry. Did something so bad that
he doesn't even take this opportunity to sort of say and at this point everybody knows what his great great uncle had done, and he also was like charged with crimes against humanity, but for him not to even recognize it and sort of say wow, to have then gotten to this point it's such a slap in the honesty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it is. It really is. And this king expressed his hope that the Congolese people would be able to live up to the trust placed in them by Belgium. Well, how about if you come over?
Yeah. I wouldn't need my trust.
Yeah.
It's the actual, and I think it goes some way to also show, even now when we get kind of countries being unwilling to accept the atrocities that they committed, that is a part of it, right? You just hold on to, no, nothing happens, fine. Yeah. Look, if we didn't go, this, that, and the other. But wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And Lumumba was in attendance witnessing all of this. And when he got up to speak, he stated in front of the king, "We remember the ridicule, insults, and beatings we had to endure morning, noon, and night because we're Negroes. We recollect the atrocious suffering of those persecuted for political opinion or religious, exiled in their own country. Their fate was worse than death itself." This was a powerful moment and reflective of Lumumba's character. He wasn't going to allow himself to be intimidated and have the struggles of his people go unnoticed and unacknowledged. This bravery reminds me of Thomas Sankara. Because he used to go to France and just cuss people out. just there like,
it just has to be done.
Like, he would just be like...
Like, you've disrespected our people, our country, exploited it for decades. Yeah. And I'm just going to stand here and be like, oh, thank you so much.
Thank you for the honour.
Thank you for trusting
thank
us.
Thank you so much.
And giving it back
for giving
to
us independence. Yeah. What do you mean, giving us independence? It shouldn't be that.
Yeah, so I'm... And one thing to say, though... For a lot of people, a lot of historians, this point and these words that Lumumba says is often considered as him signing his own death.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't taken, well, it wasn't, you know, people weren't like, well, good on you for... No. From a Western perspective, it was
very
much
seen. This man is not bowing to us.
He's not bowing. Yeah. Oh, dear. And he's not going to... And especially he's going to be prime minister. He's going to make it difficult for us to sort of have that sort of... We're letting you go, but we'll still be involved.
We can't do our neo-colonial... business. Yeah. this man is in charge. Even his daughter Juliana Lumumba recognized that her dad was not a professional politician. He was a rebel. The king therefore took him for a troublemaker.
After gaining independence, the country quickly fell into a political crisis, and for several reasons. I mean, quickly, it literally felt like click of a finger, there was crisis after crisis. So first off, the government was split into two opposing groups, so that quote-unquote partnership did not last very long. The first group was very much led by Lumumba, and they believed that the country's independence was a great opportunity to develop without interference from Western countries. But the second group, led by the president Kasavubu, wished to maintain a relationship with Belgium and other Western countries. Mm. I feel like through the process, Kasavubu just... You know, I don't know what softened him. I don't know why, but he wanted that alignment to stay. And this obviously caused tension between the two groups. And since Belgium was unwilling to fully let go of the DRC, they supported Kasavubu's efforts. Lumumba's rejection of Western involvement in the Congo made him a problem. Another issue that emerged post-independence was the new ruling class's neglect of the country. And we've seen this so many times post-independence. They were more interested in enjoying the material benefits that they'd been denied under Belgian rule. So you had parliamentarians voting to increase their pay from $2,000 to $10,000, whereas the annual monetary income per African was less than $50. There was no, I don't feel like there was any appreciation of, okay, by us doing that, where are we going to get
the
money?
We're denying people.
Where are we going to get the money from? We're just going to appear out of thin air.
There's no magic money tree.
No magic.
I haven't heard that in a while. I was going to say hope she's well, but I'm not really sure.
Are you bringing it back?
Say invoking the spirit of Theresa May. No, thank you.
Dissatisfied with their salaries and working conditions, workers like teachers striking. At the same time, the military needed to be reformed. So what was going on is you still had Belgians at the top of the military. And so it was like, okay, we're now free. Why are you here? So there was some reform required. And so what Lumumba decided to do is he appointed his quote unquote friend, Joseph Désiré Mobutu, as colonel and chief of staff of the army. This was not a wise decision. There were rumours at the time about Mobutu being a double agent with links to the Belgian and American intelligence services. So, yeah, not the best idea. Again, very much signing his death.
Kind of reminds me, it's Sankara and Compaoré all over again. Yeah, you know? These frenemies stabbing people in the back.
And we do cover Mobutu's story in the book. It's a continent.
Yes, just in case.
Just in case. Yeah. But yeah, if you want to find out more, definitely that's what we cover under the DRC chapter. During this time of chaos and instability in the Congo, you then also had the Katanga province also declaring its independence from the country, okay, with Belgium's support, obviously.
Yeah.
The Congo appealed to the UN to intervene and expel the Belgians, but the situation remained unresolved. And Lumumba also sought assistance from the Soviet Union and independent African countries as well, which caused alarm among Western powers as well as Kasavubu.
And in light of this, on September 5th, 1960, President Kasavubu dismissed Prime Minister Lumumba, but this was illegal and illegitimate. Lumumba refused to accept this and reacted by dismissing Kasavubu from his position. As a result, the situation was at a standstill. On September 14th, Mobutu intervened, claiming to neutralise both Lumumba and Kasavubu temporarily until the situation stabilised. But in fact, this was a coup against Lumumba. Love a coup. Had a coup in a while.
But I think to also recognise, like, the country gained independence 30th of June. We're in September. Your president and prime minister are both sacking each other.
Yeah.
And they do this over radio. And then, yeah, obviously, yeah, former communication. Drama. But, like, do you know what I mean? And then, yeah, a couple of days later, oh, right, your head of the military is like, right, I'm basically putting them both on a timeout. I'm taking control, but actually that's a coup. Like,
these power hungry.
So...
it's like, is it the deprivation? Do you know what I mean? That makes people just be like, I want the power. It's just not even thinking about other people and benefiting the country. It's just all about, we see what Mobutu does later on, don't we?
Yeah.
In the future. But yeah, it's an interesting theme we see.
Well, I think it's that element of taking control of a country. There is no, like, rule book or and for the Congo itself, you know, we say, you know, King Leopold came in 1885 from there, and they gained independence in 1960. There is all the Congolese people are seeing is sort of this, you know, exploitation, destruction, and there is no, we do see a lot of countries when they gain independence, that struggle of, yeah, like, how do we do this? What is the best course of action? But fighting between each other is not, the solution.
It's, you know, almost as though it was almost engineered to happen because the colonizer country just leaves them in this state. They leave dragging their heels, almost being like, well, fail then and prove us right. Which is why a lot of people, it's interesting, in Nigeria, a lot of people still ask, what would it be like if the British were still here? Like, that's a common question. Which just goes to show the extent of the, you know, how much it's ingrained within the population. Mobutu's forces placed Lumumba under house arrest in October, but he escaped, only to be rearrested whilst Kasavubu remained in power. Lumumba and two associates, Joseph Okito and Maurice Mpolo, were assassinated on January 17th, 1961, less than 7 months after Lumumba became prime minister. Why exactly was he assassinated and by whom? Well, any guesses?
It's our classic. The US will be involved. Yeah. The US will be involved.
It's just like, we're the new colonizer in town. We've been funding the colonizers, but it's our turn to have a slice of the pie, essentially. Mm. Yes, it was the work of the US and the Belgian governments with the support of Congolese puppets. Lumumba was vocal about freeing the Congolese people and allowing the country autonomy over its natural resources, which threatened Western interests. Now, see, this ties into almost what we see today. I'm not being so simplistic and saying if Lumumba was still here, then we wouldn't have the issues.
Yeah, we can't be sure.
But we do see how this really paved the way for the current situation in the DRC today.
No, definitely.
So we have a trigger warning here for a graphic depiction of violence. And then you can skip to the point within the timestamp if you want to skip this part. Lumumba was executed by firing squad, hacked into pieces and dissolved in acid. The Belgian officer overseeing this, Gerard Souette, decided to keep Lumumba's tooth and other body parts as a trophy. It wasn't until the late 90s that he admitted having Lumumba's only remains, a tooth, in his possession. Lumumba's tooth was eventually returned to his family and he was buried in Kinshasa in 2022. As his daughter reflects, her father belongs to the country because he died for Congo and for his own values and convictions of the dignity of the African person. So this man was killed in 1961. And it wasn't until 2022 where he could have a lawful burial.
Yeah.
That is something that is actually illegal in the UK. If you deny someone the right to have a legal burial, it is a crime.
For him to have kept...
I didn't even admit until the late 90s.
Until the late 90s.
You know.
To have kept that as some sort... And I think it goes to that dehumanization
100%.
Of Africans.
100%.
That you're keeping it as some sort of...
A trophy.
Trophy. You know,
almost like the head of an animal that some people keep.
And this Lumumba had so much potential.
Yeah.
And the fact that that's how his story plays
out.
That's
the way it ends. How can it end like that? You know? Literally a tooth.
A tooth.
That's all that we have. Look at what they have in Ghana for Kwame Nkrumah. You know, they have a whole museum display for him. You know, obviously he didn't die in that way. But it's such a shame that the DRC has been denied that sort of thing, just to have for Patrice Lumumba. And an episode that we did a few episodes ago on repatriating African items covers this as well. Just this phenomena of European colonizers taking things from the continent, taking dead body parts and just keeping them, taking skulls and just keeping them.
Yeah.
As though, you know, these were souvenirs. These are human beings.
I guess Lumumba's story, like many that we covered of Pan-Africans who then end up... You know, just not,
lost most leaders.
Being completely just their ending and kind of ending too soon and not having the opportunity to really see their countries fulfill their potential is frustrating.
It is.
And it feels like for a lot of them, we just get to the point where like, right, they're in, we have independence, let's do this. And then it completely gets thrown away and prevented in these ways. The DRC, I know there's a lot going on at the minute, but yeah, the DRC does continue to grapple with a multitude of challenges from political instability, corruption, to natural resource exploitation, which we also cover, and ongoing violence, which has left the country very much struggling to progress. And for me, feels like just in a constant state of crisis. So it's just that feeling of like what could have been. So yeah, do make sure that you stay up to date. We will add in this episode show notes so you find out a bit more about what's going on in the DRC, why we're talking about it, why it's being talked about. It was a very important for us story for us to share, and I'm glad that we
I'm glad we've finally been able to cover him,
because
he definitely has been popping up in a lot of our stories, so he deserved his own episode for sure.
Thank you for listening.
Yes, you can follow us on Instagram at It's a Continent Pod, on X,
Twitter.
When I type Twitter into my phone, like, it's not there. I have to type in X now.
Will you just put in X?
X at It's a Continent. And also don't forget to subscribe to our newsletter, itsacontinent.com/newsletter, and our website as well, itsacontinent.com.
Bye.
Bye.